On this episode of the Teacher Nerds podcast, Ron is flying solo and speaking with Michael Hernandez. Michael is an educator, author, speaker, and consultant. We discuss his upcoming book, Storytelling with Purpose, Digital Projects to Ignite Student Curiosity. Speaking with Michael, we learn what digital storytelling is and how it can be used in every classroom. This is an amazing episode that will have you looking at stories and storytelling in a whole different way. Buckle up and get ready to learn. And now, let's get into the show.
Have you heard about the nerds? What's the word? Teacher nerds. You can tweet them out on Twitter. You can find them on the gram. After listening to their podcast, you'd be sitting there like, bam! Trying to take the teaching from one level to the next. Reaching up to Canada and down to Mexico. Gotta go. Teaching nerds. Start the show.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Teacher Nerds podcast. I'm Ron Nober, and I am without Joe DiPaolo today. He had something pop up and was not able to be joining us, but I am a technology teacher for third grade to eighth grade, and Joe, who's usually with us, is a fifth grade teacher for math, social studies, and science. And today we are welcoming guest Michael Hernandez, coming to us from Los Angeles. Michael is an educator, author, consultant, speaker. I got the joy of seeing his session at ISTE in Philadelphia this year. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to see you. Your session at ISTE was awesome, and we'll talk about it, but you got a book coming out that I am super excited about. So super happy to have you.
Hey, thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So we are, well, we'll start our show with our icebreaker. And Michael, you're a film teacher and film creator. So our this and that question today is feature film or documentary?
Oh, that we're playing this. Or that playing this, or that on the Teacher Nerds podcast show. Or that, is it this? Or that, is it this? Or that on the Teacher Nerds podcast show.
And I'm going to let you go first. That is a tough one. Can I say yes? you know?
Pick one and then explain why, and then why you would also pick the other one. How's that?
Okay, that's great. Yeah, so I think most people like know and appreciate fiction film because where you start as a kid, and so we have an emotional, nostalgic attachment to that. And some of my favorite films are fiction films. I forget who it was who said sometimes you have to lie a little bit to tell the truth. And so I feel like sometimes with literature, it's the same way. You kind of create these fantastical situations in order to get to these deeper philosophical or emotional truths. So I love that. And I love the creativity that comes behind that. But at the same time, documentary is so powerful. And in the work that my students do, I feel like their documentary work is always stronger than their fiction, just because, you know, there's a real world connection to it. It's really hard to write good dialogue and find actors who can perform well, as we probably have seen even with professional work. And there's some really amazing, unusual, and powerful stories that are true. And so I think documentaries provide a great opportunity to explore that. So yes, yeah. And
I would kind of go and agree with you. I mean, at my heart, I know my wife and I love documentaries. I mean, there's something just about the this is real. You know, like aspect to it where sometimes you're almost mind blown that this is a real thing happening somewhere. And I think it was, you know, one of the good things about things like Netflix and all coming along, we really got to check out documentaries that had places like Blockbuster and West Coast Video survived. I don't know that we would have had the opportunity to see. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so we were really introduced once we got to, it wasn't even streaming. It was when you were sending the DVDs back and forth.
Yeah.
You got much more options, you know, for what to watch. So it was really awesome. But yeah, I mean, those fiction films are, you know, that's like you said, where you grew up. you know, the jaw.
Exactly.
You know, for me anyway, my, you know, I'm 50, the Jaws and the Star Wars and, you know, all these fiction films. So
yeah, yeah,
it's definitely, exactly. Yeah, it's not an easy one to pick one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough one.
And now we're going to take a little break, but we'll be back in a moment. Are you ready for a podcast that celebrates innovation in education? Well, look no further than the What School Could Be podcast. On the What School Could Be podcast, you'll discover stories of educators and education leaders who ignite student engagement, purpose, and joy. Experience the power of project-based, place-based, and product-based approaches that spark student engagement and purpose. Unlock the potential of personalized, inquiry-based instruction that embraces diversity and taps into every student's unique abilities. The What School Could Be podcast, inspiring imagination, igniting change, and empowering the next generation. And now back to the show. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about you and like your journey to where you are in education now?
Yeah. So currently I'm a high school teacher in the Los Angeles area. And I teach broadcast journalism, film production, photography, and graphic design. It's sort of a job that I stumbled upon. I wanted to be an artist and went to film school. So I have my Master of Fine Arts in film production. I moved to Los Angeles to go to film school. And then when I graduated from film school, I was looking at all of my private school student loan debt and realizing that I was going to be a PA and going like trying to scramble to find a job. And I'm like, I should have thought this through a little bit better stumbled across this job teaching film and journalism. I'm like, this is great. I can do this for 5 years, pay off my student loan debt, and do my own projects in all the spare time the teachers have.
There's the fiction part of the story.
There you go, of my documentary, right? Of my life. And so now I'm going to be starting year 25 of the 5-year plan.
Wow.
So I fell in love with teaching. You know, I had done it as a graduate student, you know, being a teaching assistant, and really enjoy that, and just sort of fell in love and just kind of stuck with it. And because of the subject that I teach, I have a lot of flexibility to pivot, and I'm not really constrained by standardized tests. So I'm very fortunate in that way. And that keeps me inspired. And my creative side gets to be explored through that too. Cause I feel like, you know, we're talking about this storytelling, and teachers are storytellers. You know, we craft a story of the narrative of our curriculum. It's like a choose your own adventure, sort of going down this path of where are we going, right? We have a roadmap of where we're taking the kids and the experiences that we create. They're like little scenes of a movie. So I really enjoy that. And I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's, you have to be good at improv as well. So
yes, exactly.
So clearly from, you know, what we're going to get into, you know, storytelling is your passion. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's who you are and what you do. What was it in your early years that fostered that love of storytelling?
That's a good question. I don't really know. I do know that, you know, I never really liked movies as a kid growing up, because all the movies that I saw just were like, you know, Disney movies, and they would just seem kind of fake to me. They didn't really resonate with me. They didn't seem very authentic to me. And it wasn't until I went to college as an undergrad that I got to see like art house films. And I'm like, oh my God, this is like amazing. Like, it's literature. It's like thoughtful. It's creative. It's thought provoking. And so at that point on, I'm like, okay, like I want to do something like that. And I don't know. There was something about it of being able to move people with just flickering light and sound. And you can like make someone cry, you can make someone think, you can move somebody to do something and take action, hopefully for the better. I really enjoyed that concept of being able to do that. So maybe some people would gravitate towards, you know, poetry, which I also love, or writing or gardening or, you know, sports, as that thing that's within them that just sort of radiates fun and enjoyment and connection to other people. I think that's part of it too, is like the interaction piece of, you know, it's collaborative. When you make a film, you have to work with a team of people, and you're collaborating with your audience because you're getting feedback from them and seeing what's working and thinking about getting into their mind and like what's going to get them to think this way or feel this way? I've got to really understand them. And so a little bit of psychology in there too, sort of, you know, like teaching, right? What's going to resonate with my kids and why are they reacting that way? And what can I do to like sort of Jedi mind trick them to like, you know, enjoy this or embrace it in a more constructive way. And so I guess all those pieces are maybe why I'm glad that you asked, because I never really thought about it or talked about it out loud. So that's why.
That's fascinating. It's interesting to me that as a kid, you know, I would, you know, reading your biography and looking at your website and all, I would think you were the movie kid, you know, like with all the movies and knowing, you know, reciting the quotes and, you know, but that's awesome. It's interesting that it came to you later in your, you know, your young life.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting too, because I think we expect our kids even in school to know what they're going to do for the rest of their lives when they're in third grade. And that's not fair, you know, because they haven't experienced anything yet really in life. And so, you know, just exposing yourself to different things. Like I wasn't exposed to art house films. We didn't have them in the city where I grew up, you know, in Central California. It wasn't that advanced and my parents weren't into movies. So I didn't have that experience, but that's, you know, a big piece of my book too, is experiential learning and getting out into the world and noticing and being exposed to different things is really going to help, you know, who knows where it will take you and what will inspire to do. So, that's really cool.
Yeah. That's awesome. And it's one of the reasons, you know, that kind of idea of not knowing what you want to do or what you want to do at such a young age that hits with me and the work that I do with kids is because I know had I been exposed to some of the stuff that I teach at a young age, my trajectory would have been different for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, because my career path was archaeologist to dog trainer to teacher. It is not the standard teaching career path.
That's kind of the same thing though, isn't it?
You know what? That's what made me want to teach was I took a step back and I looked at myself and I said, what is it about what you did with archaeology that you liked? And I loved when people would stop by a site and I could talk to them about the site. Mm-hmm. Or when I was running a crew, educating my crew about this area, this site, the people that lived in this area. Mm-hmm. And what I love about dog training is getting to teach owners about their dogs. And I was like, it's the teaching. Mm-hmm. Love the teaching. So mm-hmm. that's what made me want to go back to school and teach. So your book is Storytelling with Purpose, Digital Projects to Ignite Student Curiosity. And it comes out in December.
Yes.
And it's being published by ISTE.
Yes.
So what are digital storytelling projects?
That's a great question. You know, I feel like when people hear that word, and I wrestled with what to call it, because I feel like story has, when you say storytelling, people revert to picture books for children. And we think it's sort of, you know, this frivolous sort of thing that's not serious, especially in terms of learning. But, you know, like I just said, you know, everything is storytelling. Teachers are storytellers. It's just complex. You know, scientists are storytellers. They have to explain their work. They have to write a grant proposal to explain to people why they give them millions of dollars for their research. Politicians tell stories. Journalists tell stories. And so it's really a way to sort of synthesize. It's a way of thinking. And the product is sort of a byproduct, you know, the end story that you create, whether it's a movie or a podcast or a digital book. It's sort of the end product, a byproduct of the thought process. So I see storytelling, you know, working with students for, you know, 25 years almost, that you can see the wheels turning and there's a lot of deep thinking that goes into it. And so it's a process, a way to make sense of the world. It's a way to organize your thoughts. And then the digital part of that is all of the new things other than text, right? So video, audio, digital books, illustrations, all of these pieces that also work alongside with text. It's just not text exclusively. So I think when people hear storytelling, they might think, oh, that's a frivolous distraction, you know, like I did when I was a kid, like this is a frivolous distraction. I'm not interested in it because I'm somebody who's like curious about the world and how people think and what's going on out there. And so instead, what I think is important about this is we're faced with these big challenges right now of low student engagement. Kids aren't interested. Maybe you've seen it even before the pandemic. AI has come out and everybody's freaking out like, oh my gosh, how do I assess the kids? They can just like type in a prompt and the essay's done. What do we do? And so, you know, thinking about all of these things, I had to write this book because it's really a solution to a lot of those, you know, existential challenges that we're facing right now in education. And if I were to rename the book, I would have put, you know, learning authentically into the title, because that's really what this is about. This is a return to being human, and it's about being curious and being allowed to explore your curiosity through the curriculum. And it's about empowering students. It's about trusting them and honoring their sense of curiosity. And then they express, you know, all of our curriculum and the skills and the concepts that we need them to learn through a story project. And the story project is the goal. And it's so much fun that they're working on this goal that they don't even realize that they're learning all of our curriculum, right? So, I mean, just think about, I think I might've mentioned this at the ISTE presentation, but think about the times you can recall a standardized test fondly. Like, how many memories, good memories do you have of taking a test? Probably none. Right. They're probably only traumatic. Why would we want to scare people away from learning that way? And so instead, yes, we're going to have rigorous, deep, critical thinking happening, rigorous research, and it's going to be hard work to make a documentary or a digital book or an explainer video. But you're going to learn the curriculum. But I care about the end product. I care about making the movie. I care about publishing that book because people are going to see it. And therefore, I don't even think about the learning that goes into it. And so it's just a really great way to solve these problems, because in the end, each of these projects the kids make is unique. And I think that's the challenge with the concern about cheating with AI and cheating even before AI, right? If you expect the exact same answer from every student, of course it's cheatable.
Right.
Right. You can just copy the answer or share it with somebody. But, you know, my journalism students, every story is unique. Yes, they could invent the facts and get that wrong. That's an ethical violation. But each story is its own thing. It doesn't look anything like anybody else's story ever. And so that sense of originality and that humanness and that creativity is really going to be a value in the age of AI. We're going to really have to value individuality and originality and creativity. And so this helps solve a lot of those problems.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was one of the first things I thought of, because, you know, at ISTE was, it could have been almost like ISTE, the AI version, or like it was every session had AI somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was nice because so much outside of the ISTE community, there was a fear of AI. And I thought what was nice at ISTE was there was this is how we embrace it. This is how we use it. There wasn't the fear part. You know, I'm sure there were a session or two that, you know, talked about some of the negatives possibly, but it was more about embracing how we can use it and how we teach students to use it ethically. And I think that's so important. And so, from what you just talked about, I wanted two questions kind of popped into my head. And one was, I'm a math teacher and I'm listening to this. And what is your response to me saying, man, what are you talking about? Storytelling in a math class? Like, you know, for me, I think, oh, that's the language arts. They're going to take care of the storytelling. Or I can maybe see it in my social studies, you know, department. But where am I going with storytelling in math?
Right. Well, again, storytelling is making sense of things. So on a very practical level, data visualization is storytelling, right? Taking a sheet of raw numbers, right? You have a spreadsheet. It makes no sense looking at the raw numbers. How do I make sense of this? And so you turn it into a data visualization, charts and graphs. One of the examples that I put in the book was, again, the kid who was not interested in math, but he was interested in sports. And so the teacher found a way to merge those two interests. And so what he did, he gathered data from sports teams and created data visualizations, in this case, like a heat map of shots on goal. And this is actually what professional sports teams do, is they analyze data, right? To see where do they need to, practice? Where do they need to put their defensive players? How to adjust, what's the data showing us? And so there's math in sports. And so people don't realize, again, this interdisciplinary nature of the world. You know, we're always teaching in silos because that's how school's set up. And we say to ourselves, I'm not a storyteller, I teach math. I'm not a storyteller, I teach social studies. I'm not a storyteller, I teach science. But how you're always asking the kids to explain their work and explain their thinking. And for the kids, it's even more vital because, like, what's the point? Why am I doing this? How does this apply? And that's the engagement piece. That's not only going to just keep them there in the seat, but also going to make them become lifelong learners, lifelong mathematicians. And instead of saying, I don't do math, or I'm not good at math, or I don't understand why I need to take advanced math, it doesn't make sense to me, they can say, oh, I know why, because I have this bigger goal of, I want to find out the best way to solve this problem for my sports team, or I can get a job, doing this thing. And it happens to involve high level math. And I think that's the ultimate goal, really, is not how do I get the kids to pass a test, although those are day-to-day challenges that we must deal with. But it's also like, once these kids leave us, what are they going to do? How do they process the world? And we know that, given the state of, our political system and misinformation and disinformation, are they able, do they have the skills when no one's looking to be able to discern fact from fiction? And understand statistics and data, right? And that's just one example. It is very applicable in a lot of ways on day-to-day obvious basis, and then more as a like becoming a productive citizen kind of piece.
Sure, sure. And I guess I think, a lot of people, even in that math scenario, people think digital storytelling, it's getting into the mindset of understanding it's not just a video, right? Because I think like...
Yes.
A lot of people come back to it's a video, but like you were saying, just the graphics that you create for your data, I think every sports team now has an entire analytics department that all they're doing is looking at data. Right. And I'm sure if, I don't know anything about ballet or anything, but I'm sure there is data that has to go into ballet and the size of your stage and, coordinating who comes out when and where, so there is that storytelling, like you said, it's not going to be the video necessarily.
Right. And that's a great question. I should have clarified that better. What is a digital story? Digital stories are pretty much anything. It can be as simple as a single photograph. And that's something I discuss in the book, as a way to freeze time and give us time to look and contemplate and analyze. You can mark up a photograph, labeling things, asking questions, adding statistics or facts in there. And there's other things, like there's audio like podcasts or just doing interviews and talking to people. There's digital books, which are kind of like a universal container project where it can incorporate every piece of media. You have, obviously data visualizations we talked about. Video documentaries are really complex and very powerful, as we were talking about earlier. So it can mean a variety of things. And what's great is in the book, I kind of break it down into like very simple, easy versions of that and more complex versions. So when you're ready to, expand and you've got the experience to do that, you can do that. And I show you how. And again, depending on the class and the subject matter and how old your students are, you can try different kinds of media and whatever's appropriate for your particular lesson in your curriculum.
And it's amazing speaking to you, because the things that pop into my head of storytelling, I had mentioned to you before we kind of started to record, I never thought of myself as a storyteller, but having worked as an archaeologist, I'm like, of course I'm a storyteller, I'm letting right. the artifacts tell me. But I just even right. thought of a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. How many times do I look at a t-shirt and there is a story being told with the graphic on that mm-hmm. t-shirt, whether it's a promotion of social justice or, you know, a political view or something, like just a single t-shirt. And even having students gather t-shirts and look at them and what story does this t-shirt tell is right. Like mind blowing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess the big question is why? Why would we need to think about it this way? Why would we need to incorporate digital storytelling in any classroom, math, science, whatever? And it's two sides of that. It's the thinking and the processing part. It's a vehicle for the learning upon which we hang all of our skills and concepts. So it's a goal, an end product that the students can be proud of and work towards. That's authentic and real. It's not fake. It's not a test that gets thrown away. It's not an essay that goes in the trash. It's not a worksheet that just nobody cares about, not even the teacher, right? It's like something that we care about that can actually make a difference. And so when you have that elevated sense of purpose behind it, like, oh, somebody can actually use this. Somebody will actually see this and benefit from my hard work. Like we ask the kids to literally blood, sweat, and tears to get our assignments done. So why are we wasting that energy? What's the message that we send to them if their hard work just goes in the trash? Like if you were a teacher and your administrator asked you to work on a report and they're like, thanks, and they just threw it in the dumpster. Like, what do you think, right? Why did I waste my time? Why does this matter? I'm going to look for another job. That's exactly what we do to our students every single day. Right. So let's do something where we're actually, like, I look at my kids as like minions. Like, I feel like you guys find out what's going on in the community and solve the problems. So let's find a challenge and celebrations as well. Let's find ways to celebrate, uplift, and solve problems through the energy that we're spending doing the learning. And along the way, just so happens, we are, like my journalism students, for example, I call journalism in the book, I call it STEM for the humanities.
Nice. Right?
Because you're creating a product for an end user, the audience. Right. And you have to do research. Right. You have to prototype. You have to build something. You've got to test it. You've got to like get it out there. And then it's going to react with, you know, this audience for the purpose of doing something. I'm going to enlighten people. We need to change the policies. My students did a story last year about about people running stop signs at this one intersection in town. And they did a story about it and the police saw it and they started enforcing and had parked a patrol car out there and gave people tickets. Guess what? It probably saved someone's life.
Right.
So it's like they learned all of the skills of my curriculum, the research, the writing, the interview skills, the videography, the editing, right? And it's connected to civics, this idea of participatory civic engagement. It's not an abstract concept you read about in a textbook and nobody cares, right? We've got to show kids, if you really want to learn something, you've got to do it. You've got to feel it. You've got to be it. And that's, we haven't been doing that with education because it's just on a piece of paper that gets thrown away. Instead, let's create a project where they are participating. People will see it, will hear it and react to it and make society better. That's what we should be doing as educators. Because that's telling the kids, that's the real lesson, is that you are a member of society and your ideas can matter, can be purposeful and can be helpful. That's what we should be teaching. And so I use storytelling. We should all be using storytelling to do this on a very small scale, very simple thing. Like we're going to take photographs. We're going to make, you know, a meme for social media. We're going to make an illustration. All the way up to, I'm going to make a documentary about math concepts and how they're applied throughout history, right? Or people of color and why they've been, you know, relegated to the background when it comes to scientific discovery. All of those like interdisciplinary pieces can come to life and students can become passionate because they can, you know, apply, connect it to their own personal life instead of being removed and not connected to the curriculum. And I think that's the challenge of the low engagement, and that's how we can solve that problem, and also how we can solve the problem of civic illiteracy and digital illiteracy that we struggle with right now in our society.
And I think also it you know, we talk about SEL so much, right? It builds, it can't help but build empathy.
Mm-hmm.
But like, mm-hmm. Because you're connected to it.
Yeah, right. It's like I said, the journalism is STEM for the humanities. STEM, right? You have to think of, or design thinking, actually, in my book, there's a chapter on design thinking and how storytelling is a form of design thinking, because you are creating a product for an end user. And so you really have to get into the head of the end user. What do they know? What do they need? What do they like? What are they afraid of? What's the best way to convey this? What questions will I ask them? I have to get out into the world and I have to communicate with people. I have to interview them and do a pre-interview through an empathy interview. There's a cool project in the book called an empathy interview where they go like, how do I know what I don't know? Yep. I don't know what I don't know. So I'm going to go talk to somebody who knows it and I'm going to ask them, tell me, like, what's this like? And then that helps inform their research and the direction they're going to take their story project. So yeah, SEO is a big piece of this. And what's interesting is our school struggled with that a lot. And they did a lot of, I think a lot of people do this. It's just sort of like they sort of check the boxes, but it's not really actually working because we haven't actually changed the system. And it's the system that's causing all of the problems, you know, high stakes testing. There's no time for one-on-one interaction. There's disconnect between the curriculum and the student. There's no interaction or collaboration. We consider collaboration cheating, right? You know, because they're helping each other out, but that's the way the real world works and I need support, right? And so we're not changing the system. We're just like putting flyers on the wall and saying we're doing something about it and we're not. And so I do feel, and that's a big sort of woven into the DNA of my book, is all of these social emotional wellness ideas, which is caring for other people, you know, listening to other people. And listening, I think, is the number one skill of storytelling. And that's why I have a chapter dedicated to observation and research and inquiry. And, you know, people think that, you know, we've been told the story of choice and voice and we want to hear student voice and all this stuff, which is true, especially underrepresented voices. But in our society where so many people are talking and they don't know what they're talking about, you know, you have like an 8-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 47-year-old, like, don't open your mouth. Let's listen first. And then let's take in all the data from people who have different experiences and backgrounds and perspectives. And then let's synthesize it and try to make sense of it. And let's be honest about that. And I think that's the key piece of the not just like go out there and say whatever you want. I feel like I got that feeling out there in the education world that that's what storytelling was. Like, tell your story. And that's cool. But I feel like our society needs more listening rather than more talking.
Yeah, I love that because that's definitely something that, I mean, like you were saying, 47-year-old, 50-year-old, like sometimes, you know, I find myself struggling, you know, with the listening part. You're always so ready to think about what you want to respond with. And I think that maybe even more so with like Generation Z and Generation Alpha, because they are a group that everything is hyper-personalized for them. So it's consistently about you. What do you want to say? What do you want to watch? What do you want to hear? Bringing that skill of listening is huge. And again, when you're talking our political landscape, being able to listen to each other, you know, is something that's kind of fallen by the wayside a little bit. So yeah,
definitely. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's just the idea of like, and I think the way school is set up sort of exacerbates that problem. It's like, you have to have the right answer and you've got to argue that, whether, you know, in high school, we have Socratic seminars and it's the loudest voice that wins, right? We have competition culture, whether it's sports or whether it's debates or science fair or whatever, instead of working together, we're working against each other. And I feel like, my philosophy of storytelling is one where, yes, you're the person who has the vision and you're processing this, or your team and your partners together are working to create this vision, but you're starting from a place of humbleness and of research and of observation and listening and finding new perspectives and being surprised and acknowledging that surprise and having the mental and intellectual agility to pivot and to process something new when it comes to you. And I feel like those are the key skills that are the most important skills that the kids are going to learn when they work on these kinds of projects.
So could you just maybe highlight, I know at ISTE you highlighted some of the cool, I mean, the projects that you've done and the places you've gone to do some of these projects. Could you just tell listeners just maybe, you know, one or two just to, you know, kind of give some background? Because I was first, well, I know it's high school. So that's one thing, because I'm thinking of my middle school classes, but it was fascinating. And that you took a group of teens to some of these places was fascinating.
Yes, exactly. So I took students to Cuba, Cambodia, Vietnam, Guatemala to produce documentaries. And I did that for a couple of reasons. So I teach at a very privileged school in suburban Los Angeles. Most of the kids are white, they're pretty wealthy, and their worldview is very limited. And so many of the kids, although not all of them, many of them, when they travel, you know, they go to like resorts and they close the door, and it's basically the U.S. within these walls, right? And I picked up, you know, just this lack of understanding of other people and cultures and ways of living. And so I needed to figure out a way to kind of address that through our work. And, you know, so I decided that, you know, this would be a great way to do it is through experience. And so I organized these trips, trained the kids in, you know, documentary filmmaking, and we went off to a country for a week. And, you know, we had a coordinated, we met with NGOs, we interviewed different people, we got to meet really interesting people you wouldn't have access to if you just went as a tourist. They shot footage, they conducted interviews, and they wrestled with all these ideas and this research to try to make sense of it. And that's, again, the making sense of part of storytelling, to synthesize the ideas and the information. And then they produced these stories, and they ended up being these life-changing experiences for kids. Because, you know, when you go to a place and you smell the air, you eat the food, you share a meal with people, you look them in the eye, people who are very different from you, who have very different histories, who look different than you and have different forms of government, and yet there's this personal connection, it's just mind-blowing. And, you know, experiential learning is key for everyone. I think that's, if we can swing it, that's the best way to do it. And so it was really transformative. And so, like I said, some of the best projects the students made were these documentaries, some of which are referenced in the book. And I realized that not everybody can afford to go to Vietnam or Cambodia, right. Another country is just the other side of your town, right? You've got immigrants from all over the world. No matter where you live, there's an immigrant community from somewhere, right? And so you walk into the store and you meet people, and you like look at historical sites and you talk to people who, you know, built those sites or are affected by different events in your community. And you start to build bridges and build understanding. And I think that's super important. So, yeah, that's a key part of the book as well, are those documentary projects and what I call living history projects. And there's oral history projects. So those are great ways to connect students to other people, other cultures, and other times.
And so when you speak documentary, again, you know, so I think of hour and a half, 2 hour long feature film, but that's not what your students are producing, right?
Right, right. So these projects were typically between 6 to 8 minutes. I think the longest one was 10, which is a long time. That's a lot of time. So again, thinking about scale and experience and how much time and resources you have in your classroom. Let's say you're a science teacher, you're going to do a story about, you know, environmental justice, right? How climate change or pollution is affecting certain populations of people. This could also be a social studies project, right? Or a math project, or you collaborate with a math teacher to collect the statistics on these things, right? So again, the interdisciplinary nature of it. But you go out and you spread it out and you say, okay, this team is going to cover this part, this team is going to cover this part. Maybe you make an Instagram series of like 1 minute documentaries, right? And it's manageable, it's bite-sized. It's still difficult, right? You still got to do the work, but it's not overwhelming. And so that's the advice I give in the book is always start small, right? Don't start with a 10-minute doc. It'll never turn out well, especially when you're beginning. And these were kids that I've had for several years in my cinema class, right? So if you're the science teacher or the math teacher doing a documentary, start off small, just start with interviews, boom, start off getting footage, right? Show me the evidence of this phenomenon in our community. And then you can build on that.
Mm-hmm. And you don't need tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment, right? I mean, you could do some of this with Microsoft Flip, right? Like you tell a story on
right.
Flip, you know, or
right. Exactly. And so there's a couple of pieces to it. There's the collecting of the data, right? What I call rich data, which is like interviews and video footage and audio recordings. And so you need a device that can do that. So, you know, if you have a Chromebook and you're in a lab situation, that's not going to help you, right? Because you're not able to go out into the world. So you need to figure that out. But like one of the pieces of my book too is like, what equipment should you have and what do you need to do that? My journalism students use their iPhones because it's got an amazing camera. We have external microphones that we plug in. It's not intimidating. Everybody has one. They know how it works and it's a snap, right? So you don't need professional gear to do it. And so when you're making choices about technology purchases, like, and then you do that and like a lot of people recommend those things, you know, think about not just what you need right now or last year. Like, I need the kids to write an essay. Great. So you need a keyboard. Okay, awesome. But what else can you do with it? What other potentials? It must have a video camera. It's got to have a microphone. And it's got to have some free software built into it that you can use to edit video, you know, or some apps at least that you can use to do that. And more, you've got some great apps that are out there for free for educators. But you want to think about like flexibility and options in the long run, not just, you know, one thing that you're trying to like get the kids to pass a test on like from last year.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel very lucky in our district. We have Wii Video. So we have a full mm-hmm. license for every student in our district. So even thinking mm-hmm. about like you were saying that their platform, there's a library of video clips already that you could be narrating mm-hmm. over, and you don't necessarily even need to go out and maybe get some video because we're in kind of like, for me, I just think about for myself, we're in a rural district. Mm-hmm. If I want to go anywhere to do interviews or capture from some footage, I got to requisition a bus. I got to get permission slips going. I got like, it is a,
it's
a financial process and a physical process.
Right.
So there are things there that you can use that. And even, I guess you could pull in from like, Pixabay has royalty-free images and video and sound and music that, you could do all
so that's
richness.
Yeah, those are really important questions and challenges that a lot of people face of funding and time and all of those things. And that's definitely something to be aware of. I feel like the point of any kind of storytelling is just like in a science lab, you've got to collect the data yourself. Otherwise, it's not real. And also, we want to create a culture where we have digital literacy. So with these, apps like Wii Video and, Adobe Express and Canva and things like that, they have royalty-free content that you can use. But we want to also instill the mindset that kids just can't take something off the internet because A, it could be copyrighted and you're violating the law. B, it could be fake. It might not be true because you don't know who made it. So, this idea of just assuming that what's out there on the internet is for real is dangerous, right? That's how we end up in a bad place with our election process or like our health, right? Like, what should I put into my body? Should I have this vaccine or not? I just grabbed it off the internet. I saw it. So rather than just, yes, we can do that. And I do that myself. I use free content all the time from those kinds of platforms. But I think it's important to instill the process and what it feels like to have to go out into the world and ask people permission to interview them and to record footage of them doing things and to talk to them about what they're doing. And so again, moving away, like I noticed this with my students too, is like, they would rather text people rather than call them on the telephone. Like I have to teach skills of how to make a phone call. I have to teach skills of how to write an email because they don't know. They just text. Right. And they're so disconnected right, from other humans, going back to the social emotional wellness piece, sure. I want to create connection through these projects, not create distance. And I know this is a tangent to what you were talking about, but
it's important. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the idea of going out and collecting data in the form of audio or video footage or an interview or something like that, even a photograph, you know, I want to encourage those skills so they become comfortable in the real world and not just in isolation. And I think, you know, that's the danger of school too, is that we've got this fear of the other, where we can't let the kids go online because there's something dangerous out there. Okay, but that's what they're doing when they go home. So how are we helping them if we pretend it doesn't exist? Let's embrace those tools and those platforms and show them, you know, in a professional setting, how you can use these tools safely and ethically. And that can only happen when you actually do it. And again, these are all the multiple skills that you learn sort of under the hood through these digital storytelling projects. You know, you don't have a separate lesson necessarily on these things. It's just like, as it comes up, right? It's like, okay, now remember, when you're looking for this footage, you got to do this. And when you're going out to shoot, you got to remember to ask permission and da 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 da, right? Those kinds of things. So anyway, it's about engaging the world rather than, you know, just kind of letting somebody else do the recording for us.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Okay, so yeah, that makes, I mean, and again, this is why I love the conversations, because now that to me makes so much more sense than where I was thinking, you know, so I love conversations.
And so just to get back to that very important point you said about funding and capital and, you know, access to technology or access to experiences. And I'm very aware that in some communities, having kids go into their communities or even home with gear is dangerous. Right, it's going to get stolen, or there can be a victim of crime because they have the tool, right? And so we want to be very aware of that. At the same time, you don't have to get a bus and go somewhere. You can have the kids talk about it in the book a little bit too. Like, what are some solutions to this? What if I can't do that? Can you collect it on school property? Can you go around campus and do that? Can you like when the kids are coming to and from school, can they collect some footage or some audio, right? And how do we connect it in a way that's feasible and easy and not too much of a lift for anybody? We got to be definitely mindful of that, but also get into this mindset, which is one of the most important ones, of engaging the world rather than what school has taught us, which is school is separate from the real world.
Right.
Right. It's pretend. It's in a textbook. It's sanitized. Right. There's never anything difficult because we're in a hurry and this isn't on the standardized test that the teacher's accountable for. And so we break connection between students' lives and learning. And I think that's the problem that our country is facing, is we don't see a connection between our personal lives and lifelong learning. Like the skills needed to interact with people, to listen and observe when no one's watching, when you're not getting graded. And so I want to instill that feeling and those skills and an empowerment through our projects, through our curriculum. And for me, that's the most important part, is like, I need productive citizens out there because I want to live in a good world. Anyway, I'm rambling, but.
Oh, no. It's again, like the why, I think, is almost or maybe sometimes more important than the content, right? Because people need to understand the why before they see it's important for them to bring into their study.
And again, going back to the AI thing, like you can Google search stuff and find the answers, right? You can have AI draft an essay for you. So the real question is, why are we doing this and what's it for? Those are the questions that need to be the focus of learning now, not so much the technical, like how. The scientific method, for example, right? Like keep coming up with new discoveries. Like think about like the olden days, like they didn't know half of what we know now. We have new discoveries all the time. So to have kids memorize like facts is great, but soon it will be outdated. Instead, we need the mindset, right? We need the mindset of like, how do I ask good questions? How do I analyze this source to make sure to verify that it's credible, right? And to be flexible. And instead of, and history is the same way, right? History is static. It never changes, right? But it does, We get new, like your right, archaeology. There's a new discovery, right? They had a new dig, and like, oh, this is together with this other thing. We didn't know that these two cultures intermingled. Boom, textbook changes, right? And so what we thought was static is not anymore. And so it's not about memorizing those facts that never change, because they do. Right. It's about the mindset of being able to manage that and be flexible enough and to be open-minded and to adapt and to grow after they leave our classrooms. That's what we have to teach them, not memorizing facts and how to take a test.
Yep. Yeah. Nobody out there is, very few people are going to work to take a standardized test on Monday when
they're
So for sure.
Right.
If I asked you one of your favorite digital storytelling projects, what would it be?
Ooh, I have a lot of favorites depending on what I'm doing. I'm a huge fan right now of the editorial illustration. And so if you have scrolled through social media before and there's an article and there's a picture, right? That's an editorial illustration. It's like the cover of a magazine or an illustration that accompanies an article. And the reason I like that a lot, and I've done this assignment with art students, with my journalism students, and my photography students, and I will do it again with my graphic design students this year. It's like many teachers have this assignment already, like design book covers. Right? A cover for a book. Right. We do album covers. What you have to do is sort of process the ideas, the concepts, maybe the emotion. You have to think about metaphor, maybe irony, which is a really complex high-level thinking skill, and combine that with color choices and objects and relationships of objects to each other and fonts, maybe. And it's very high level thinking in a single image. And so what I love to do is, like, it's a fun add-on to any class, right? Like, teachers probably do this in maybe an English class or social studies class, like make a poster about like this period of history or this this law that came out of this event that happened, right? And everybody loves it because it's creative, right? But there's a lot of deep thinking that has to go into it. So that's one of my favorites right now is editorial illustration. Although I'm always a huge fan of explainer videos, and because it's sort of a universal story project, I call explainer videos the Swiss Army knife of digital storytelling projects, because you can use it to explain any concept in any subject area at any grade level. Explainer videos are the way to go.
And again, could be something short, a minute, less than a minute, something like that.
Make it 30 seconds. A TV commercial is 30 seconds, right? And they tell you everything you need to know about that product. Boom, done, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think even just that, when you throw that time constraint on, now there's a whole nother level of thinking that has to go in, right? Because what are the most important points that I need to get in within that 30 seconds?
Exactly.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, and you said book release is December 5th?
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay. I know you also have a podcast.
Yeah, I do. I do have a podcast called Change the Narrative. And it's a podcast about innovation, education, work, and life. And I should have some new episodes coming out this fall. So I'm very excited about that. I'm going to also have some podcast episodes from my expedition to Antarctica that I did with National Geographic back in February. So really excited about that. And along with the book release that's coming out, we're going to have some online courses and some other content that are available that kind of relate to that. So if the book's not enough or you need some more, I'm trying to make that available to everybody to kind of expand on those ideas and make it really useful for folks.
And the courses that, you know, are going to kind of coincide with the book, are they courses for educators, courses for students, or courses for both?
They will be primarily for educators. Yeah,
okay,
educators,
so we can help education our students. Cool.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's phenomenal. That's awesome.
Yeah.
As we wrap up, where can people, you know, find you on online, on social, things like that?
Absolutely. So I am on Instagram at changing.the.narrative. I'm on the former Twitter, I guess it's called X now, at Cinehead. And of course, you can find me on LinkedIn at Michael Hernandez.
Okay. And you have, your website is Michael Hernandez, Michael.net. Hernandez.net. right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. I can't thank you enough for being here. You've opened my eyes to what storytelling is. I've seen it in a whole new light now, what can be storytelling. So hopefully our listeners got the same.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun helping me process the ideas that I didn't know I had locked away in my head. So thanks for letting me share. It's really exciting.
I definitely appreciate your time.
Teacher nerds, knocking on your door. Open up, let's take your teaching further than before. Give it a try, don't be shy, there's nothing there to lose. Worst thing that happens, kids get pain on their shoes. We're talking teacher nerds, I'm talking teacher nerds.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Keep up with every new episode by subscribing on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Anchor, or anywhere you listen. When you subscribe, be sure to give us a review and tell a friend. Visit us at teachernerds.com. Follow us on Twitter at teachernerds, on Instagram at teachernerdspodcast, or email us teachernerds@gmail.com. And remember, we're nerds with a Z. Most importantly, thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds.